Blog Talk Radio.
The Senate will come to order.
Are you ready?
Yeah!
I want to know, is everybody ready?
Yeah!
All right, here we go. Everybody, get on up and do your stuff. Did you hear what I say? I said everybody, get on up and do your stuff. You better get up.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Congress College. My name is Elizabeth Crist, and I want to thank you in advance for your 30 minutes, for spending 30 minutes with me as we talk about Congress. We do talk weekly on Congress College on the Monday show, which, of course, is the show you're listening to right now, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. When Congress is in session, this is when we outline the week, and we literally talk about the bills that will be coming up in the Senate of the United States and in the House of Representatives. And then on Friday, Joe's time slot, we recap the week. And what that means is we talk about what they actually got done, what they did in the Senate, what they did in the House. Maybe we talked about a hearing. What was the result of the hearing? You know, I do Congress College twice weekly, in part so you can answer this really, really simple question. Were you represented well in Washington, D.C. for the week? Because think about it. Those guys and gals in the Senate and the House, they are representing you. They're representing me. They're speaking for us. So don't you think we should at least have a general idea what they're up to? I do. I sure do. And the reasons I do the show. Another reason is to familiarize folks with the free website, gradegov.com, and GradeGov lets you grade a member of Congress. How about your member of Congress? You want to give him or her an A? Maybe you want to give him a C or a D. You know, Donald Trump says that we the people, we're tired of being ripped off D.C. So maybe you want to rip off a D or an F to your member of Congress. You can do that on GradeGov. It also prompts you to write a letter after you've graded the member of Congress. And you know what, folks? They see your letters. They see your grades. Because GradeGov worked hard not to use the standard, the software program, the routine email system that is provided by the Senate and the House of Representatives. Those are just reporting systems, folks. They just tally up how many letters they got on keywords like budget or Obamacare, and they get a report to the Congress on those. Nobody sees your letter, but on GradeGov they do. The grade goes to the member of Congress. The letter goes to somebody in the member of Congress's office. And you know what? Members of Congress, look at GradeGov.com. So tell your friends, tell your family about GradeGov. I would really appreciate it. And you know what? Make you feel better. It really does make you feel better if you think your voice is being heard just a little bit. All right, we're going to start out this week. We're going to start out talking about the Senate because starting tomorrow, Tuesday, 6 o'clock, the Senate's going to have a redo of the cloture vote they had last week. That means they get two additional Senate Democrats to change their mind, to get a conscience, to figure out that they were wrong when they voted last week. They need to get 60 votes so that the Senate can at least fully debate the Iran disapproval resolution and then have a final vote. Let me say also to those folks listening, hey, Andrea and the chat room, happy Rosh Hashanah to our Jewish friends. That's one of the reasons the Senate and the House are going to have sort of a light schedule this week to allow our Jewish friends to observe Rosh Hashanah. So the first vote tomorrow is 6 o'clock in the United States Senate. And as I said, they need 60 votes. You know, it's kind of crazy. The president has said several times he considers what the Ayatollah has been saying, you know, Ayatollah Khamenei has been saying, death to America and Israel. He says that those chants are merely rhetoric from a politician intended for a domestic audience. And, of course, the Ayatollah has been saying that more and more recently, I think he actually said it after the Senate had their vote late last week. What happened from 2013 to now? I keep trying to rack my brain. What happened to members of Congress? What did they learn? What did they find out? They learned bad. They learned bad data. I don't mean bad as in incorrect. I mean bad as in dangerous, as in horrible. You know, in 2013, the House of Representatives voted 400-20 to put more sanctions on Iran. 400-20. Mitch McConnell was trying to get the Menendez-Kirk bill up in the Senate. Remember, the Senate Republicans were in the minority, and Harry Reid wasn't allowing any vote on anything. So the House of Representatives could have passed a dozen bills putting more sanctions on Iran by 400-20 or 435, whatever. It didn't matter. Harry Reid was not going to call them up. What happened? 400 members of Congress 2 years ago said that they were up to no good. Is it because it's an Obama legacy and these people are so beholden to Obama? They want that all-powerful money that Obama supposedly is able to raise? What changed? I honestly cannot figure this out. Listen to this. This is on Saturday. This is what changed in my mind. This is one of the tens of dozens of things that changed from now to 2013. But this one just happened Saturday. It's been discovered that Iran has an unexpectedly high reserve of uranium. It's being extracted at a new mine, and the IAEA has discovered this. Now, this is 90% of what John Kerry said it would take Iran till 2017 to stock. Apparently, they all of a sudden have it. Wow, poof, bam. On Saturday, the IAEA said that they have discovered a high reserve of uranium. Well, at least they're being transparent. Remember the honor system? They're supposed to self-inspect. Well, actually, the IAEA found this. They have got a high reserve of uranium. What do you think they have that for? Again, what happened, folks, between 2013 when members of Congress were putting on more sanctions? Again, I'm not going to repeat it a million times, but it just blows my mind. It was 400 for putting more sanctions on, and 20 congressional members, I think they were all Democrats, said, no, we don't want to. What happened from there to now? And now we're learning, well, I don't know, the Ayatollah's been saying death to America and Israel. We're learning that they have more uranium. It just doesn't make any sense. Well, the House is going to wait and see if the Senate passes anything new on the Iran deal, anything new on the disapproval. Will they get two more Senate Democrats like they need? I guess we'll find out tomorrow about 6:30. In the meantime, what's the House going to be doing? They're honoring Rosh Hashanah, too, but they're also scheduling for later in the week two votes on two abortion measures, one by Dianne Black, the Republican from Tennessee. That would put a one-year moratorium on Planned Parenthood funding. And then Trent Franks, he's a Republican from Arizona, that would add more criminal penalties if you violate the Born Alive Infant Protection Act of 2002. Congresswoman Black's bill would prohibit federal funds from going to Planned Parenthood unless the group certifies all of their affiliates and clinics will not perform or provide any money for abortions. And then the Franks bill would take any abortion doctor, anyone who harms infants showing any sign of viability or failed to provide medical care to a baby that survives an abortion would make it an additional criminal penalty. Obviously, we can sort of read what these are supposed to be about. They're supposed to be about trying to calm the Planned Parenthood defunding movement that a lot of members are having. They want to defund Planned Parenthood when they start talking about the omnibus appropriations bill, which is going to have to be talked about, folks, because there's only about 8 days left between now and the end of the fiscal year. So will there be a shutdown? Will the shutdown be over Planned Parenthood? And will that help Donald Trump? I want you to take a listen here. This is a little more than 2 minutes, I believe. Take a listen to Harry Reid talking about this, and then we're going to talk about it some more.
There are just 10 days of scheduled time left before the government basically shuts down for lack of funding. Democrats have been calling for a bipartisan budget negotiation for months, and to this point, nothing but silence. Instead of working with us, Republicans on the presidential trail and here in Congress are calling for a government shutdown. Not all of them, but enough to cause a lot of problems. And they want to deny women the access to critical health care. That's their hue and cry, and it continues.
2 years ago, families across the country watched as Republican leaders promised they were not going to shut down the government. Republicans had spent months refusing to negotiate a budget deal, and they thought they were just going to wait until the last minute, kick the can down the road for another few months, and then do it all again. Well, we all remember what happened next. Republican leaders let the Tea Party take over, and they pushed us into a completely unnecessary shutdown in a bizarre and failed attempt to derail health care reform. And only after that crisis, Republicans were willing to come to the table, make compromises, and work with us to reach a bipartisan budget deal. Unfortunately, Republican leaders don't seem to have learned any lessons from 2013, and once again, we are just weeks away from an artificial crisis that could hurt our economy.
Over the recess, Leader McConnell mentioned that he does not have the votes on Planned Parenthood, that he would work in September to reach out to the White House to find an agreement moving forward on government funding.
Well, you know what? I'm not going to play that. I'm just going to tell you what the end of it is. The end of it was a reporter saying, didn't the Democrats want to shut down the federal government? Up until a couple of weeks, they did. Ted Cruz and some of the House Republicans have kind of stolen that away from the White House. Because remember, the White House, even the president said not that long ago, if they don't give us enough money, we're going to shut down the federal government. Remember, that's why they haven't been able to do the 12 appropriations bills. The House of Representatives have done six of them. What happens when they do the six? They get over to the Senate. Senator McConnell tries to call them up, tries to get them 60 to get them pending before the Senate. And Senate Democrats are saying, no, we don't want to debate this because they don't have enough money in it. We're going to shut down the federal government because we want more money. Remember, we were talking about this on Andrea Shea King's show several weeks ago, how crazy that logic was. That was the logic played out. Well, now it looks like congressional Republicans are going to steal it away from the Democrats again. You know, does this play into Donald Trump? I think it does. I think it does because Donald Trump can say, look, whatever deal Mitch McConnell makes, whatever deal Speaker, I don't care if it's the best deal in the world, if it deals with the tax extenders and they get the best deal in the world for all these tax extenders that are expiring. How about tax extenders for teachers that use their own money to pay for a lot of their school supplies for their classrooms? That's expired. How about extending that again? It doesn't matter what the deal will be. Donald Trump will say, I could have done it better. And look, dysfunctional Washington, especially if there's a short shutdown, a quick shutdown. Let me read this. ABC Washington Post poll over the weekend. 72% of Americans believe politicians cannot be trusted. Two-thirds think the country's political system is dysfunctional. 6 out of 10 Republicans believe the next president should come from outside political establishment. That's pretty phenomenal. Now, let me get you to listen to, this is Mark Levin on a rant. I might not play all of this either. This throws Mitch McConnell under the bus. We're going to talk about this for a minute and see if this whole strategy is playing out. Listen to this for a minute.
Now, let me tell you, we're going to wind up going to war with this enemy. Barack Obama will be long gone. He'll be on his fifth autobiography. He'll be worth $300-400 million. There'll be a push to name a day, a national holiday after his birthday. You wait and see. In the meantime, because the Islamo-Nazis in Tehran will lie, because that's what they do. They lie. They cheat. They murder. They torture. They rape. That's what they do. They play by no rules. You watch as some of you send your children and your grandchildren to war, because they're going to nuke up now. They're going to have over $100 billion to do it. They're going to be armed by the Russians and the Chinese. All bets are off now. They're going to get all kind of technologies. And they are very serious. They're very serious. And our political leaders are not. And I want Mitch McConnell to know something. You will have blood on the hands for the rest of your life, and so will the Republican Party. You have taken a once great party that stood on principle, that stood against slavery, that stood against segregation, that stood against the Nazis and the fascists, that stood against the communists, led by great men, Dwight Eisenhower, Ronald Reagan, Everett Dirksen, led by great men. And you, Mr. McConnell, you're a quisling. You're a little man. You're a know-nothing. And this is on your head. You could have stopped this simply by following the Constitution. You claim to support the Constitution. You don't support it any more than Barack Obama. You put your...
Okay, that's where I... Senator McConnell could have stopped this if he had just used the Constitution. Well, it's smart. For talk radio, I guess Mark Levin believes this. He's a lawyer. I'm surprised that he does believe this, but he's a lawyer. That Mitch McConnell could have somehow made the president submit this treaty, this document in the form of a treaty. You know, this is hard to research. I've done it a bunch of times. Again, we've talked about it on Andrea's show. Since 1939, when FDR is the one that created executive agreements. Since 1939, you know how many of these things that should have been were submitted by presidents in the form of an executive agreement that they just get done? Congress has no say in them at all. 11,300 are executive agreements between now and 1939. How many executive agreements have been executed by presidents? How many of those deals were actually treaties? Another 1,200 of those deals were actually treaties. So it's not the purview of the Senate leader. He can't make the president submit a treaty. There's nothing under the Constitution that says he can make the president submit anything in any form. Since 1939, since FDR, that president is the one that changed the game. As I said, there have been 11,300 executive agreements. So Mitch McConnell can't make president do anything under our Constitution. If he just used the Constitution, Mark Levin said. You know, it's been clear from back in 20 that this president was going to do it. He was going to make a deal with Iran, and he was going to do it without Congress. You can hate Corker Cardin. You can hate that bill. You can hate that process, but at least it was a process. Would Mark Levin or any of those people have been talking about if it was an executive agreement just quietly done? Would talk radio have even been making any noise about it if the president just lifted the sanctions, which we know he could have done, and did the rest by executive agreement, went to the UN, got an agreement, No say from Congress. Would Mark Levin even be talking about it? Let me read, you can Google this. It's easy to do. This is, I think, the London Telegraph newspaper, the Telegraph newspaper from November of 2013. The United States, I'm quoting, the United States and Iran secretly engaged in a series of level face-to-face talks over the past year in a high-stakes diplomatic gamble by the Obama administration that paved the way for a historic deal on Tehran's nuclear program. I think if you went back to talk radio November, December, January of 2013, starting of 2014, you wouldn't have heard anything about this. This was the start of it. Nothing, not a word, not a peep. But all of a sudden, Mitch creates a process where we do hear about it. While, albeit the process might be lame in your mind, Carter Cardin might be the lamest process you've ever heard. Remember, it was something that had to be signed by the president. So he's not going to create a process that allows him to have to get approval by two-thirds. If he did that, he would have submitted a treaty. And Donald Trump has said it. It's a horrible deal. I could have negotiated a deal, blah, blah, blah. All of the talk, all of this throwing members of Congress under the bus when, frankly, in this case, I don't think they deserve to be. A lot of times they do, but in this case, I'm not so sure. I think it feeds right into Donald Trump. So they've created Donald Trump to a certain extent. So let's take this over to the Democratic side for just a second. Okay, let's take this to the Democratic side for just a minute. Bernie wins in Iowa. Bernie wins in New Hampshire. Hillary gets a close second. Does that work? Is it too late for Biden to get in? Of course it is. Of course it is. At that point, it's too late for Biden to get in. Here's the deal. Obama moved from the left to center. When it came to the general election, that's how he got in. He started out way, 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 way left, and then he moved from the left to the center and became a populist. Donald Trump has taken a card right out of the Obama playbook. Trump is moving from, you might want to say the right, I'm not sure he's from the right, but he's moving from the right to the center as a populist. But I'm not sure he was really to the right. So what happens? How do you deal with this? Most people, most political watchers will say the only way that you can beat a populist is they have to sort of implode all on their own. You have to wait them out. You have to let them implode, wait them out on their own, which is what I think some of the candidates like John Kasich are doing. Be quiet, wait them out. In the meantime, the Dems are ready for Joe Biden. They're waiting for her to implode after the Benghazi Select Committee hearings on October 22nd, and then he will ride in and save the day. He met with a big Democratic donor over the weekend in New York City, Joe Biden, a big donor of Hillary's. And, of course, the million-dollar question is, did he ask, are you still in love with Hillary Clinton, or would you switch over to me? I think that's what part he's doing. Take a listen to Donald Trump here for just a second, talking about himself on late night TV. Here you go.
I don't want to start off serious, but today is September 11th. I'm a New Yorker. You're a New Yorker. What does today mean to you?
In a certain sense, it means strength, because the way the city came back, I've never seen anything like it. And the country came back and the city came back, and there is a great strength and resilience that we have in this country. We have amazing people. And I think more than anything else, that's what it means.
That was almost 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And now here we are. I'm the host of The Tonight Show, and you're the front runner by far for the Republican Party to be president of the United States. When did this happen?
Something happened to both of us.
Something's
going on.
For you, when did it become real? I mean, was it always real?
Well, you know, it's interesting. My wife actually said to me, if you run, you will win. She sees a reaction. And the reaction is people are tired in this country of being ripped off of seeing poor things happen, whether it's trade with many different countries. We have the worst trading pacts, whether it's the deal with Iran, which could have been so much better, and it would have been much better. There were so many other things, so many things that we just aren't doing. We're not taking care of our vets. Our vets are suffering. Never like
so he's able to take all the issues that are sort of kidney stones that we're having trouble dealing with, and he wraps them all into one, and he does it brilliantly. We're tired of being ripped off by government. That is, you can't say it any better than that in my mind. He knows how to take the brand. He knows how to bring them to you. He knows how to do it well. And he's sort of, in my mind, taken a playbook out of Barack Obama. It's a beautiful, beautiful playbook if all you want to do is win some political game. Of course, we're worried that the political game is the fate of the United States era. So in the coming weeks, when the Senate Republican, the House Republican, and try to create a shutdown, if that's what they do, and Mitch McConnell is deemed and the Speaker is deemed as incompetent because they're trying to avoid a shutdown, is a shutdown good for Donald Trump? Seems to me it plays right into his hands. They have no idea what they're doing. They are so discombobulated. They are so in disarray. That's what I think it does. Why would Ted Cruz be playing into that? He's orchestrating a lot of this. Why is he playing into making Donald Trump bad? Does he think he's going to be number two, or does he believe the populist sort of deal, which is the populist message will eventually die? They want more meat and potatoes than just life is good, life is bad. And he's going to inherit all of those. He'll inherit all of Donald Trump's followers. I don't know. That might be what he's doing. We're going to have to see. Meanwhile, I do this at every hearing of Congress College. Get your paper, get your pencil out. The president's daily schedule for today at 10 o'clock, he heard the presidential daily briefing. At 12:05, he leaves for Andrews Air Force Base. He is going to Iowa. And what he's doing in Iowa is he is talking about college access and affordability in a town hall meeting. Then he flies back. He actually just got back 6:20. He just got back to the White House. All right. I hope you guys had a great time. Sorry if they're interrupting. It looked like there was on my side. As I said, tell your Jewish friends, wish your Jewish friends a wonderful Rosh Hashanah. I'm going to leave you with these BG talks, Jive Talk from the Bee Gees. I love this song. Everybody have a blessed week. I will talk to you real soon, so stay tuned.